The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. This week, it's part one of my conversation with David Borden, Executive Director of the Drug Reform Coordination Network and StopTheDrugWar.org. You know, if I recall correctly, and I do, back in the previous century, my guest on this show was one of the people encouraging drug policy reformers to get with the modern age and to make use of the World Wide Web. I remember sitting in a meeting with him back in the early 90s, talking about this stuff, and I remember thinking, this guy knows what he's talking about. I just looked at the website, and the very first issue of the Drug War Chronicle went out in 1997. The current issue is number 1229. My guest, if you haven't already guessed, my guest is David Borden, the executive director of DRCNet, StopTheDrugWar.org. Dave, introduce yourself. Tell the listeners a little bit about you. Who are you? What do you do?
As you said, I'm the founder and executive director of StopTheDrugWar.org. Many people still refer to us by our historic and still official name, Drug Reform Coordination Network, DRCNet. That was my first mistake, the name. So I'm a fellow longtime drug policy reformer, almost maybe as long as you've been, Doug. My first work in the issue was spurring more online activity in the early days of the commercial internet. And I was in a position to get some grant support because of how the timing worked out, resources that became available while I was doing this. And I've been in Washington since 1995. We've worked on a range of issues from restoring college aid to students who lost it because of drug convictions to human rights and other issues at the UN. And on the brutal situation in the Philippine drug war, I've done research on armed robberies of state legal cannabis stores, and we've as you've mentioned, we published a newsletter since 1997 that people can subscribe to on our website, Drug War Chronicle. Try to follow all the different corners of drug policy. The typical day has a roundup of stories, but Phil also, which Phil has been taking a short break from, but those will be restarting soon. Phil's latest article is on the Trump administration's recent designation of drug cartels as terrorist groups, what the ramifications might be of that, and with or without that designation, you know, there's the question: is Trump going to order military strikes in Mexico because of he happens to be thinking of it when he wakes up on a given day, and to people who see Trump as the saw him as the candidate of peace and now the president seeking peace, Trump actually started at least two small wars when he was in office, and I don't think that really adds up. Not that Democrats have a perfect record on this either, but that's that's other politics. So we in the last 7-8 years or so, we have taken on democracy issues as a part of our portfolio. And in a in a holistic sense, not solely how they intersect with drug policy, but that's been driven by the human rights and democracy crisis in the Philippines under Duterte, who's no longer the president now, but his legacy of drug war killings still continues at some level. And his daughter is the vice president, not necessarily for long, because of an impeachment move against her. He's trying to get his allies reelected and elected in the Senate. So that's not over. But that's the route through which we got involved in democracy and rule of law issues. We support targeted sanctions measures that go after rights abusing officials and the International Criminal Court. Although it's only the Philippines case where we have a specific stance. And so that's been a expansion of our mission. In general, through the years, we've taken on issue areas where there was space for something not already being done, that I felt that we were in a position to do something helpful with. Belatedly, I've realized when a need isn't being filled, that often reflects the funding prospects in those specific areas. And it takes time to explain our interest in these areas to our members as well sometimes. But we are also engaged in core drug policy reform issues, making the case for legalization, cannabis policy reform, sentencing, criminal justice reform, et cetera. So that's a little about me.
Evokes, Drug Reform Coordination Network, StopTheDrugWar.org. You educate and inform people on so many vital issues. You help advocates and other groups to organize, raise public awareness, fight for reform on a lot of fronts. And so let's get to some of those fronts. You mentioned the Philippines, and loyal listeners know that I've been covering the situation there over the last several years. And I've been able to do that in large part thanks to your efforts. You put together news conferences and events. You've been focusing attentions on the horrors that were perpetrated in that nation. You had the Senator Lenny Robredo, who had been imprisoned by Duterte and his cronies. And the Philippines does have a new president, as you mentioned, Bongo Marcos, the son of the former dictator Ferdinand Marcos, who was deposed years ago, and sadly had been the U.S. was, it's embarrassing to admit that the U.S. when the U.S. makes mistakes, but Ferdinand Marcos was one of those, and he was a mistake for decades. He was a horrible, horrible individual. He violated human rights right and left. Enough from me. You talked a little bit about the Philippines. Tell us more about the situation there. Has it improved? What's up with Senator Robredo? What can you tell us, Dave?
Maybe you're thinking of Senator De Lima.
Oh, God, not Robredo. I'm so sorry.
Lenny Robredo is the former vice president who is running for mayor of Naga City right now. The vice president in 2017, early during her term, sent us a video for our first UN side event that criticized President Duterte's drug war very strongly, which sparked a campaign to have her impeached that did rage in the media for a few weeks, but ultimately no members of the Congress were willing to file the complaints that some civil society, the not as great side of civil society groups had prepared. Senator De Lima, Lila De Lima, spent nearly 7 years incarcerated, and she was freed over a year ago now. The terms are 6 years. She's running for the House of Representatives now. And I've been honored that we've been able to work with her She keynoted our UN event almost a year ago. Via an online appearance, she had decided not to travel internationally until her last case, the last steps, until the dismissal was final. But there were two close allies of her there, and we've done other work with her advocating against the sanctions against the International Criminal Court that the Congress had taken up, and which have now been imposed through, not through legislation, but through a presidential executive order. The human rights groups, the Commission on Human Rights have estimated that the number of killings is on the order of 30,000. The government acknowledges perhaps 7,000 of those, although not in most cases, as cases of wrongdoing. Whatever the true number is, the pace of them had declined by the end of the Duterte presidency, and it's fluctuated since then, but it's still continuing at around one per day. Those are the cases that are known through media reports. There could be more. And so it's not at the level of problem it was before, but it's still bad. And if the Dutertes come back into power directly, they could potentially ramp it up again. I'm worried, and this is just speculation, but Trump, during his first term, praised Duterte for how he was fighting drugs two times. He didn't directly say killing people was good, but certainly by the second time he made that comment, if not the first, he would have understood that these were extrajudicial killings. Not long after the second time, these killings started in Indonesia. They never reached the level of the Philippines, but also bad. And I'm worried at some point he's going to say, "Why don't we do what here? What Duterte did there?" And then the question will be whether how hard to try to make that happen, and whether they have a path to do so. And I think there may be places in the country where they can. And the nature of fighting police violence is we have a judicial process, and a court can't say, "Stop killing people now," because not because that's wrong, but because there isn't a, it's too heavy of a lift for a court. A court isn't going to fire a police force. It's a lengthy process. The administration and many people on the right, not all, but many, are primed to downplay police violence, oppose reform efforts. And there's a fair chance, if not a likelihood, that the ICC will issue arrest warrants in the Philippines case this year. Duterte is the leading target. And that'll be big news. I think Trump could react to that by saying, "Oh, look, the ICC is still out of control. They're going after another good leader who was just trying to protect his people, like me, like Trump, like Bibi Netanyahu." And by the way, let's have Duterte and his former police chief and others, people who orchestrated the killings, come to the White House and talk about how we can make that happen here. I think it's very imaginable for Trump to do that, and ICC warrants in that case could be a trigger. But whether that's likely, or what kind of impact it would have, will depend on what happens here in the larger political arena. But it's one of the things I'm concerned about.
This is my conversation with Dave Borden, Executive Director of the Drug Reform Coordination Network and StopTheDrugWar.org. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. From one unstable autocrat to another, Donald Trump took office as president of the U.S. recently. You know, it's been years since I was last in D.C. How are things?
It's not great here, man. It's real.
I've seen some of the protests at the different at federal buildings. I know that you've been working alongside some of the federal workers in at least publicizing these. I've seen photos on Facebook. News is news, however you're going to get it. And if there's not enough coverage of what's happening, then at least in social media, we've got people posting photographs to show that, yes, this stuff is really happening. I'm not there, so I want to know what's going on, and I'm going to stop ranting. But it is really disturbing. It's not just the terrible people they're putting into some of these positions, although that is a lot of it. It's also the attack on the science, the attack on data, the attack on... You know that I'm a fact guy, but you also know that I'm the first to admit facts don't change policy. It's not about facts, it's about feelings, it's about emotions, it's about the passion people have for these issues. And but if you don't have the facts, then you're just flying blind. And it's just, watching all this happening from 3,000 miles away has been tremendously frustrating. I don't know that it would be any less frustrating if I were there. I'm gonna shut up. What can people do? What is going on over there? How can people support the federal workers and these federal agencies? I say CDC, HHS, SAMHSA. I criticize a lot, but at the same time, but I criticize a lot because I love the work that they do, and I want them to do better. And what's happening scares the hell out of me.
Well, I feel the same way, and... I can think of some suggestions of things to do, like going to town halls, urging members of Congress, even if your members are the good guys, pressing them to keep trying to do more. Go to protests, part of the reality we're in is that there is not a overarching strategy that's been proposed that all of us can contribute to in our own ways or consider. I have all these strategies, directions for us that sound good, but if someone else is doing something else that doesn't fit with, then are efforts going to combine? Well, I don't know. So maybe my thought is tell your members of Congress and anyone else in the political system you can talk to that we need a big picture strategy. It's not enough for Democratic members of Congress to have a strategy to the extent that they do. And yeah, it hasn't been a lot of time and there's been a lot to react to. So I don't want to say they're dropping the ball yet, but we don't have a national strategy that everyone can refer to guide our own steps. Press members of Congress, go to protests, highlight the information, the cost of what's going on. For us, you know, as you've seen, and maybe that's one of the reasons you booked me for an interview now, we're taking an uncompromising anti-Trump position, although trying to make it an honest one and acknowledging when anything good happens, but being real about what's going on. And not everyone on our list, you know, even financial contributors agrees. And this is a time when there are big differences in opinion in the country, but our route, not judging organizations who go a different route, but our route is do all that we can to prevent further normalization of Trumpism and to reinforce the reality of the situation, which is it's a criminal enterprise running the government right now. Led by an individual who constitutionally appears to be ineligible for the office as an insurrectionist, a party behind him that many of whose members I'm sure still do not like him, but have almost entirely fallen in line on almost everything. You know, disregarding court orders, shutting down entire programs and agencies without the authorization of Congress. This should not be a constitutional debate in real time. You know, have those debates in classrooms, taking these actions at this time is crime. And it's doing tremendous damage. And the cabinet is a freak show. So that's where we're at. Taking that line, but being careful about tone to, you know, so maybe some people who don't see the things this way might listen to you if we can avoid triggering words that shut things off, which is hard to do, but so our approach is take this clear, uncompromising view, being honest, self-assessing about our communications and how people see things differently might be reached, but as Maria Ressa says, hold the line, and tell our members of Congress we need a plan that all of us can latch on to and support in our own ways. Won't necessarily include all of us doing the same thing. But you know, we don't really have a plan yet.
Again, folks, we've been speaking with David Borden, Executive Director of Drug Reform Coordination Network at StopTheDrugWar.org. Before we go, how can people find out about the work you're doing, continue to keep up with and support the work you're doing, social media, and, I just said the website, it's stopthedrugwar.org, but you're on social media, yeah? What are your handles?
Well, we have a Facebook page, and the handle is not neatly written, so the best thing to do is to find it from the site or to type in stopthedrugwar.org. We stopped posting to Twitter shortly after Elon Musk purchased the platform out of concerns over the increase in disinformation and the gutting of programs that were making helping people be more safe on the platform, like he's doing now to the country. So that exists, but that's not active. We have some Blue Sky accounts we're still getting into the swing of posting to. We need to get them linked on the website. So right now, Facebook, but the on stopthedrugwar.org, you can subscribe to our email list, which is the most active thing, along with the content that's on the website. And we have pages detailing our work on the UN and the Philippines on cannabis, close, not entirely, but close to up to date. And so if any of these topics are intriguing to people, that's we have a lot of our stuff that we've done at the UN and elsewhere online there. Our YouTube account has a good deal of stuff. That's youtube.com/drcnet and is linked from all our web pages.
Now, your email list, that's also Drug War Chronicle, right? Which, again, the current issue is now what, number 1,229 been publishing since 1997.
And that's a long time. Like this interview.
This interview, which will have stretched across a couple of programs, it just means that I need to get you on here more often, David. I apologize; it's been a while since I've had you on, and I'm going to have you on a lot sooner this next time.
Well, it was good to it was a nice opportunity to look at the big picture, which I don't always have time to talk about these. The issues I've had more focus on in the last, for 10 years, are not always the same as the ones, that I've been working on for 30 years and that you have for longer than that. So this was, a good, you've helped me reconnect with my roots, professionally and personally.
David, you're a good friend and you do some tremendous work. It is an honor and a privilege to it's an honor and privilege to be able to call you my friend. Thank you so much, man.
Likewise.
That was part one of my conversation with David Ward, an executive director of the Drug Reform Coordination Network and StopTheDrugWar.org. We'll have part two next week. For now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This has been Century of Lies. I've been your host, Doug McVeigh. Century of Lies is a volunteer production for Community Radio, syndicated via the Pacifica Foundation Radio Network's Audio Port service. Please support your local community radio station. Become a member. Become a volunteer. Find this edition of Century, along with an archive of past shows, at the Drug Truth Network website, drugtruth.net. You'll find a link there to subscribe to the Century of Lies podcast. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh saying so long. For the Drug
so
Truth
long.
Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the Century of Lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.